You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we have an amazing show. It's probably one of the best shows we've ever done. We've really worked on this for an exceptionally long period of time. This show is called Predispositions.
Yes.
So Lisette has a little story of an experiment that she's going to tell us, and we're going to talk about it. You want to start off, my dear?
Why you put the ball?
Pressure on you.
Pressure, predisposition.
Yeah, predisposition.
Yeah, so it's a history, the one experiment, do a group of the people to draw in some kind of scar in the face and say it's a social experiment, so people voluntarily be in there.
Okay.
And when they can see in the mirror, have a really nice scar, looks like real, and say, okay, you have to go outside in the street and see how people reaction with you.
Okay.
And then you can feel or share after that how people acting with you. So okay. Before the people leaving, it's okay, let me just do a little more stuff. And this moment, they remove the scar, so people leaving believe they have a scar.
Okay, so the scar is, and I think you said a really nice scar. What you mean is something that people would see and it would be very noticeable. So something that maybe somebody would have some self-concern, or they'd mm-hmm. be self-aware that they had this mm-hmm. on their face.
So, and then people living in the street and have their own experiment to feel the people is a boy have eyes contact,
right.
Feel the people don't take care because they or take care so much because the person have a scar. And then when they come in to share the result, so they say the most, the conclusion is most is how you feel because you don't have nothing in your face.
Okay, so again, they would put a fake scar on someone's face, show them the scar as they would be able to look in the mirror, and they would be self-conscious that they had this scar and that it changed how they looked. It changed how they felt about themselves. Then they would, the experimenters, remove the scar but told the person they were just touching it up a little, sent them out to get the experiment from the street and the results. Mm-hmm. And so people came back, and what was the typical result?
Oh, feel the people is I don't know how to say, but it's more like the discrimination because person have a scar, or they went to some kind of restaurant or fast food restaurant, and the people watching weird because the person have the scar. So all these out coming from person that really don't have nothing in the
wow.
face.
Wow. So I think one of the things that we can, I'm going to say, equate this to in a way, mm-hmm. is that when we're kids, I know that everyone teases each other, like, oh, your nose is big, you're bald. Well, not many kids are bald, but the point being is that everyone teases each other, and some people internalize the teasing, and then they see themselves as that. I remember, you know, as a kid, going to school with kids, and people would be mean to each other. Some of it would be in fun, but some of it would just be pure being mean. And some kids just kind of brushed it off, but others that stayed with them. And they may not have actually looked the way that their schoolmates told them. Mm-hmm. You know, they may have just been being picked on, but then they were self-conscious of this, and this stayed with them. So I think we go back to one of the experiments we did. You remember the experiment where the result of the experiment we did was that people judged other people's emotions as being what their own emotion was. So if someone was predisposed to being sad, they would see sadness in other people. if somebody was predisposed to being angry, like I was angry about a situation, then they will feel other people are being angry as well, or angry.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're reading into others how you feel.
You project your feeling.
Right. You're projecting.
Yeah.
That we're less observing than we are projecting.
Mm-hmm.
So what the result of all this is that our surroundings, what we witness, what we see, what we observe, are more likely or very likely tied and attributed to our own projection of our environment than what reality is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've talked before about we can't actually see things we don't understand, right? If there's a math problem that we've covered in math, we can look at something and go, oh, I understand what this is happening here. And you can understand the math and you can understand the situation. But if there's a calculus problem and you've never done calculus, you would see it and it would be like, these are weird symbols. I don't know these symbols. What's a sine? What's a cosine? What's a tangent? You know, when you talk about those things, when you talk about differentiating and doing things with integrals, you know, to some people that's like, I don't understand it. So when I see that symbology, I don't recognize it. Like, it doesn't impact me.
Yeah, but the really point here is the not take everything personal. So you sometimes walking in the street, I just figure out this person and everything happened is personal because I have this versus the say is normal reaction for people. Some people not smile with you. Some people not say hello with you. It's not you. It's the other people.
Uh-huh.
So try to reduce your own person emotion in some situation because everything that happened you believe is for your fault. You see people laughing. You say, oh, is they laughing me? Versus that maybe they enjoy a pretty good joke. And then you say, maybe I smile because people is happy. But how many times you react negative when people laughing? You know what I mean?
I think it depends on who you are and how maybe you're being. And I know that different people, some people, when they hear laughter, they think there's something funny and I want to know what it is. And other people hear laughter and they think they must be talking about me.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us really think that what's going on, and when somebody's having a conversation, somebody's whispering something to someone else about them. And there are two types of things. One is when you're very self-conscious, when maybe you have low self-esteem, you think this is happening, right? That you're looking for recognition from external. You're looking for, what is that called? Validation from mm-hmm. external sources.
Yeah.
So you're actually watching what's going on, whereas someone else who doesn't need validation maybe will carry themselves with a lot of confidence, and they will actually see people as supporting them rather than taking away from them.
Okay. So if I put you some picture, I have a real experience
two weeks
ago. When I was in one office and there's somebody coming to talk with me, just I was alone in the office,
right?
Some people coming, and when this person started to tell me some history, other person coming and start to whisper in the ear, say something to the person. So when you see this picture, how you feel?
They don't want you to hear something.
Uh-huh.
So if they don't want you to hear it, you think maybe it's about you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If this is this a science experiment right now that you're doing to me? I don't know.
Maybe no, that's happened with me. So, but I want to.
So there's a couple of ways. Number one is if they're whispering something to them,
mm-hmm.
it can. There's like I'm going to say there's three ways I take it. One is maybe they're telling the person don't share that information with her or mm-hmm. him. The other is. Hey, I want to tell you something about that person you're talking with. And the other could be, what was the other? There was a third
talking
thing.
About me.
Right. Maybe they're sharing something with them about you.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're saying, don't share this or share this with. Or they're embarrassed and they're saying, please don't share it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these things that could be happening. But based upon your perspective, your own perspective, you're going to think it may be one rather than the other. So again, your own predisposition changes what you're witnessing to be a different situation than it really is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It could be, and it could be none of the above. It could be any situation, but you see it as a situation.
Yes, and then I don't feel bad. So I see the picture, so my reaction was, oh, let me go to the restroom when you talking to each other. So I left the office because I see the person. And also, at the end, I got it what happened. But that is something that you can feel bad. You can say, no, let me leave. That is between you guys. It's not by me.
So again, the observation that any of us have of the situation is based upon how we are predisposed to believe the situation may be because of how we feel. Right. So I think one of the things we've talked about in the past is being optimistic. Yeah. You know, if you're really optimistic and positive, maybe you see that interaction as something good. Oh, they're talking about what they're going to bring me for lunch, you know.
And I say like that.
Oh, yes. I'm going to go. You guys discuss what you're going to do for me. I'm going to go to the bathroom.
There you go.
I'll come
and
back.
Say thank you for be that. Back. And thank then you can play the game more optimistic versus dramatic.
Right. And if you are like feeling frustrated because you don't feel like you're being heard and now they're having their own side conversation whispering, you may get angry. Because
maybe I don't want to know what are they talking
about. Yeah, what are they talking about? Like, I'm going to just listen in.
Less information sometimes is good.
So is anybody more correct than the other?
Correct in one way.
How you are observing the situation. And I guess the point would be is how we observe the situation is correct for us.
Mm.
It may not be correct from an objective outside observer.
Yeah.
But from our perspective, the way that we live our life reinforces the way that we live our life. Mm-hmm. So even if we have incorrect analysis of a situation, because of how the reactions happen and how they result, meaning we're getting out of that situation what we put in. And if we put in negative vibrations, negative thoughts, we may get out a negative outcome. And that happens over and over and over. And we basically confirm our own biases, right?
Yeah,
we're confirming our own perspectives.
So maybe that when I see this kind of, can say, acid environment, I can be the neutralized. So I don't want to play the game.
Mm, you bring baking soda in with you and you go throw it on people.
And then I left.
And they're like, oh, what happened?
Oh,
and
I'm, wow. Yes.
I'm melting. Throwing water on the witch.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Sea monkeys.
Okay.
Yes. So anyway, in any case, the whole idea of predispositions will be is that when you go into a given situation, there might be a saliency of the situation. That means the extent of an emotion that's happening. What's going on in that? What is the catalyst for action? Your predispositions, your biases, create a direction that you will act in. And if you are always looking for the best in a situation, if you're using emotional intelligence, which is looking at the emotional content of the interaction, and you're saying, how do I manage my own and others' emotions to get the best outcome? You may be very sensitive to what you say, how you act, how you react, and you may objectively look at what's going on in order to, when you're objective and you're not feeling angry and you're not feeling sad and you're not, remember, when we get too emotional, we shut off our ability to think. Our prefrontal cortex shuts down when our limbic system takes over. So by being calm, we may have a better, more objective observation of the situation, which allows us to manage ourselves and the emotions of others better.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
So that ends our first segment on predispositions. We'll be back with more predispositions and what positions we may take on predispositions. Can't even speak.
What happened?
Yeah, I can't. Can't speak. And you notice today we have no slides. We decided to go today without slides, and we're going to see where that is. This is our new objective for today's show. We'll be back after this.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge and his ability to come up with amazing storylines, beautiful video edits, creativity of films unlike anyone else. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and James Gulmick, actually Jim Gulmick.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today, we're talking about predispositions, we're talking about biases, our own biases, how we move, situations into certain directions based upon who we are and how we act, rather than potentially, objectively, by looking at the whole situation, that based upon how we feel about ourselves. We started off with the scar story, the experiment where there was a scar drawn on someone's face. They believed they had a scar. It was erased before they went out into public. They interacted with people. And then based upon how they think people treated them, they went back and told the experimenter, this is how I was treated now that I have this scar. And of course, the scar was removed before the person could see that they had had no scar on their face. So they actively pretended to remove the scar, which wasn't there. The point is, and there's a lot of points, but one is we all have scars. The scars may be emotional scars. They may be physical. I feel a little overweight. I'm bald. My hair is graying. Whatever it is that if we go into public, we may look at that as a badge of honor. I've been through a lot. I've been through so much. I've have the gray hair of experience, rather than I have the gray hair of being old and feeble, or I'm bald and my head looks really good, or I'm bald and I would look so much better if I had hair. You know, so we could all have a certain set of what we call scars. But the way we carry them with us into battle, I say battle, the everyday life, we either accept them as being part of whom we are and be okay with that and go, you know what? I am who I am because of these things. I'm okay with that. Let me objectively go into life. Or, on the other hand, we can presume how people are going to treat us with, you know, because of our predispositions and we know we have a scar or we know we have this trait, right? Yeah. So I think you were saying this, is that if you were talking about, Lizette, during the break, about a way to question what's going on in a situation that gets a better result. And what is that?
Yeah, so it depends if you really be concerned with somebody that you like or you love and see this kind of predisposition that you say, oh, why did my partner or my sister or my brother or my son watch me like that? Why he put this face like that or she put this face like that? So you can approach and say, hey, so what happened? So I see that how you feel is something, the idea that you don't like. So you have to do some question, really neutral question, because you can also broken this, open this door and maybe you create more issue, okay? Because typical body language say more the talk. So people sometimes do some expression, but they say, I don't want to talk, but I may be feeling, because if you don't want to talk or say something, your body language be quiet too. So when the people reaction like that, the idea is that you make a neutral question, not create more issue like that. Oh, I see that your face is angry, so you are angry with me. You go in the wrong way, because you start to put, I see you're angry. I cannot know. The person can be sad, can be happy, but have some kind of face that I see project myself in there. So it's better to do a neutral question like that. How you feel? You want to talk? What happened? So.
And I think you're absolutely right. Just remember there was an experiment with the movie where people saw a really sad scene in a movie, and then they saw one of the actors with a neutral expression, and they were asked, what do you think this actor's feeling? And a lot of them wrote down, oh, the actor's sad. Then they had a scene where everybody was happy and having a party, and they showed the same scene of the actor with a neutral expression, and they said, oh, the actor's very happy. So the predisposition, when you set somebody up for a certain emotion, they then look at the next situation and they link that emotion to the situation if that situation is neutral. Mm-hmm. So what that is part of supporting is the evidence that your own feelings carry over into neutral situations for you to read a situation incorrectly.
Yeah.
And as Lizette was saying, if you see somebody and you think they have an angry face, is it that you think they have an angry face? Are you angry and you expect them to have an angry face? And then you're like, well, why are you angry?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you yelling at me? And then they become angry and, oh, guess what? You predicted.
I am right.
You're right.
Yeah, because that's the other point.
So. You set up the situation.
Yeah.
You actually provoked the anger in the other person, and that proved to yourself that you were right all along.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, and now the other person might be, here they go again, accusing me of being angry, and then they get angry.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
Yeah. Good, thank you.
How come you don't know how I feel?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and again, why somebody feels some way, like, oh, I don't want to talk about it. All of a sudden they say, I don't want to talk about it. And you then think of why they don't want to talk about it. If you are upset with maybe yourself, you think, oh, they're upset with me because of this reason. But they might just be, I don't want to talk about it because the same thing happened to me and I'm embarrassed to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or something far worse happened to me that I did to you accidentally and I don't want to share it. Now you think they're angry with you because you did a little thing, but they're actually scared to share something with you because they're afraid of how you're going to react to what they have to say. And this is what goes on in relationships, is that it's one-upping our predispositions and thoughts of what the other person's going to say, rather than saying, let's get rid of that. Let's both, can we objectively talk about something? Can we talk about something without emotion? And that's hard.
It's hard. You cannot say talking without emotion, but you can also ask permission to the person. So that is also the good way that people allow. So you say, we can talk something deeper right now, or you feel it's not a good time. So with the permission, you can open the door, but you not open the door without permission.
You know, because in a relationship, there may be two people who are really at a time where they need to have a conversation. But it could be 10:30, 11 o'clock, midnight, and one of them can be extremely tired, and the other one just wants to know the answer, And that's the perfect soup, for a fight.
Yeah.
Because the one who's tired is frustrated because they really can't think straight because they're tired.
Yeah.
And the other one is emotionally feeling neglected and angry, and it escalates where it's like, understand tomorrow, if you want to be with that same person tomorrow, give them the night. Give yourself the night to have good sleep, a good breakfast, a nice cup of coffee if you drink coffee or tea, clear the mind, and then have a good day. Like, objectively say, hey, let's talk about this tomorrow when we're both in a better state.
And also I listen, and he's an interesting guy. He's a psychologist, and he say, every time that I feel like that, I ask myself, this issue, we need to divorce? In his mind, he's saying, no, so I can wait for tomorrow. So
yeah.
Put the value level of the issue. So this issue make a day we need to divorce. If it's no, can wait.
So I was thinking about this. When somebody does something to the other, is there a point of no return? Is there a point of no return in a relationship, whether that's a friendship, whether that's a love interest, whether that's at work? Is there a point where something happens where then you then judge all future behavior with a predisposition of you don't trust this person, or this person's annoying to you, and then everything they do now becomes annoying because you're looking at things to be annoying?
Mm-hmm.
And even if I know that, and I know this from psychology, is something true, it doesn't stop me from thinking that way. It may help me more objectively understand the situation, but it's very difficult once you lock in a certain bias on a person to get back out of that bias.
Mm.
Something we have to work on. How do we work on that?
Okay, maybe... In the next section, we can explain how.
In the next, we're not to the next section yet, but let's let's talk about this. So, say you're losing a relationship with somebody at work, and all you think about is every time you deal with that person that they're undermining you, or they're treating you badly, or they don't listen to you. The question I have is, and this happened at work, not with me, but two people at work, they were having an issue. And the one said to the other, hey, why don't we have lunch together and just chat? And it wasn't even chatting about the issue. It was developing the relationship, understanding each other better. They were both, older gentlemen, one in the category of 50, the other in the category of 60 years old. But they both, you know, had this vast amount of experience. And they were taking each other differently, but since they were only interacting on a work level, they had a hard time understanding the person underneath. Mm. Going out to lunch for an hour, talking about their backgrounds, talking about their families, talking about, hey, where do they like going on vacation? They actually built a connection.
Yeah.
That was outside work from a standpoint of understanding the other person. Before you can communicate, and remember, we do a whole show about two icebergs, right? The point of the iceberg that's floating above the water on both people is all we typically see. It's the communication. It's what we see at work, what we see when we walk down the street, when we see our neighbor. We just see that tip of the iceberg. We don't know all that stuff that's floating underneath. We don't know their subconscious. We don't know their upbringing. We don't know their culture. We don't know their family lifestyle. We don't know any of this, but we make all those assumptions based upon only what we see above. When we take the time for the icebergs that are under the water to meet and start to understand each other, this is also in a relationship,
mm-hmm,
with your spouse or friend or what do you call it? Person of interest? Maybe that sounds like a detective show.
Yeah, yeah, I guess. Somebody...
Person of passion. How about that? Your relationships is once you start connecting at that deeper level, then the communication becomes more clear.
Mm-hmm.
You understand the words that trigger because you know their background and you know how they grew up maybe or where they came from. And then you know that maybe if I say it this way, they understand it better. And the other thing is, you know, like what was Stephen Covey? He used to say, first seek understanding before trying to be understood,
mm-hmm,
try to make sure you understand the other person first.
Yeah.
And part of that is understanding how they understand things. Understand how they process information.
Mm-hmm.
Understand how they like to be communicated with.
Yeah, and so for when I have the training to become trainer, mm-hmm, so you need to also figure out in your student or participant, because some people like to see presentation, like that you do picture, or the people like to listen history about example what happened, because listen, or some people need to have exercise because by this way. So everybody has different way to understand situation. So we sometimes need to balance the way. So you try for one way, you know, working, do the second, do the third, to just start to learn who is from you to explain better yourself.
So when I'm listening to you, I'm hearing something about emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. but I'm also hearing something beyond that. Emotional intelligence is just understanding the emotion in the current situation and trying to manage emotions through it. What we're trying to say is maybe it's called relationship intelligence, RI, mm-hmm. where you understand the part of the person below the surface, the part of the person like the iceberg below the water level, mm-hmm. is that when you have that relationship intelligence, it then helps your communication intelligence in how you speak, how you listen, your body language. Maybe they grew up in a society where you need to keep your distance. I know that I work with people that there's one in particular who likes to stand really close to people. But their upbringing was being really on a close sports team. And so they were always huddling. They were always really in the face of the other people. And it wasn't anything other than I'm your teammate.
Or maybe don't listen well. Huh? So people try to listen close. No, I see people close because they don't have a good listen.
So instead of feeling like, oh, they're encroaching in my area and I feel uneasy, I tried to understand, is this person was on a soccer team or on a football team or on a baseball team, on a bowling, whatever it was, but they were really close with their teammates. And it wasn't that this was trying to make you feel uncomfortable. It was feeling like they were on your team. And when you started to understand that, it was like it would take down the anxiety level of someone being close to you. The other thing is, at some point you go, hey, you know, I know you're on the football team and you like to huddle a lot of times. I used to be on the baseball team. And when I was in left field, the center fielder was in center field and we were hundreds of feet away and we got along fine. I like that relationship. And try not to make a big deal out of it, but try to make them understand that maybe, you know, your comfort level is having the distance. And in other societies and other cultures, there are differences in how close people are when they communicate.
That is no issue in my culture.
Does not?
It can be close or far, it's no problem.
Okay, anywhere. Anywhere, anytime, any place. When we come back, we'll talk more about predispositions, communication, and whatever's next in our third segment.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge and his ability to come up with amazing storylines, beautiful video edits, creativity of films unlike anyone else. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and James Gulnick, actually Jim Gulnick.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to 90s. Today's been a tough day. We've been up since very early morning hours trying to replace a laundry system in the house. And I've got all sorts of cuts on my hand from working with sheet metal. So in any case, when I say welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim,
I'm thinking about 100 different things, which actually brings us directly into the show, which is people have on their minds hundreds of different things other than just you when you're having a conversation with them. They may be thinking about soup that they left on the stove. They may be thinking about the car payment they can't make. They may be thinking about little Joey who's sick in the hospital. There are all these other things going on other than just what's going on in your conversation with them. We were talking about predispositions. And during the break, we were talking about, Lizette and I were talking about, how about first impressions? And she said, that's not really important because when we're dealing with family members and people we're close with, we've known them for a long time. So I was thinking about this and thinking about how do we change a predisposition that we have with somebody? Because this predisposition is like that first impression. It's a long first impression because we've known them for a while, but now we just keep building and building and building all our decisions and observations on that long first impression. You know, so, and a first impression may be everything was great for 6 months or everything was great for 5 years, but then something happened and it changed everything, and now we have this new impression of this person, which colors the way we observe their actions, how we think they're saying something when they're talking to us. And how do we get more objective back? How do we become more of a listener who is really trying to seek understanding rather than just trying to fit something into a predetermined way that this person behaves? How do we do that?
I guess that you need to observe yourself. So I learned so much in some kind of situation that I handled, and then I see myself, I try to bring the solution or bring some comment to fixing the problem. Sometimes you don't need to bring. You need to listen, and you need to be empathy, but maybe people don't want to listen the solution. So we always try to say, or share your history because your history is similar. So no, maybe just observe yourself and be more compassionate to just listen, do some question, and the people feel companion in the discussion.
Okay, so listen more, be more objective. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm going to go how to change your predisposition. That is how you may try to squelch it, how you try to muffle it. You muffle it by being more aware of being objective, and you try to put your bias aside. But I'm going to say is that insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different result. You have stated doing something different, which is, okay, we're doing something different. Does that change how you're feeling about the conversation, how you're feeling about the interaction? Or do you have to do something different? You know what I mean? Like, if it's the same conversation, the same argument, the same problems day after day, how do you change it up where you completely go in a different direction to try to use a different part of your brain to solve the problem? And the reason I say different part of your brain is we know that with neuroplasticity, that if we have a problem that we keep focusing on over and over and over, we're just building that part of our brain. And then everything we see and observe is going through that part. And it's just triggering the thoughts that we have, those bad thoughts. So maybe what we need to do is go, if we were to have a good relationship with that person, how would it be? Maybe we have to study and read how to have a good relationship, how to have good conversations, what kind of questions to ask, how to get to the root of issues, but not going through the problem, going through the connection. Try a different area of your brain to connect with a different area of the brain of the other person where you both have not been pre-contaminated with thought viruses.
That's good.
You like that? Yeah. I like it. So how do we change up? Maybe change the situation. We're at home and we keep discussing the same thing. You know what? Let's go for a walk. And instead of talking about the problem on the walk, Let's talk about other things that we want to do together. Hey, I always sort of about at this point in our life, we'd be figuring what vacation we're going to go on next. Maybe what we want to do 5 years from now. Change the connection and you may have a better connection. It's like tuning in to a different frequency.
Mm-hmm.
You like that? I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So change the way we communicate by changing the location, the place, the tone, the action. Activity-based connection also changes how you think. Is that if you say, okay, I'm not going to just focus on this problem. Let's work on something together that we both like. Let's form a deeper connection over here, and let's make this problem smaller and smaller and smaller. When you only focus on the problem, and you only keep going back to the reoccurring problem, you make that communication, those two sections of both of your brains, bigger and bigger and bigger, especially when emotion is tied to it. Emotion and thought create almost unforgettable memories. And if you keep focusing on that, that's the area of your brain that's going to grow. Where if you want to grow in a relationship with a person, you need to grow holistically across the board in many areas. That's why, again, location, physical activity, what you're talking about past, future, present, about other things other than just the problem, can help you creatively come up with ways of now maybe addressing that situation by forming deeper, wider, more complex connections in all these other areas.
Yeah.
Physically, spiritually, mm-hmm. emotionally.
Yeah, and also understand that sometimes some topic is difficult to discuss. So maybe sometimes you have to come down and move forward.
The other is read books about the subject that you want to talk about. But read positive books. Don't read books about all the negativity involved. If you think your spouse or your partner may be cheating on you, don't start reading a whole bunch of books about cheating. Maybe read a whole bunch of books about better communication, about having better relationships, about going to Greek.
I read a movie about a criminal case.
How to get away with... What?
Sorry.
Why do you have a shovel? What's that shovel over there?
I don't like this question.
Oh my gosh. Let's go for a walk in the park together. Exactly. What are you talking about, Lizette?
You smell chloroform.
Terrible. The point, though, is that if you can have humor and you can have other thoughts. Now, there are certain things that happen in a relationship that are so dramatic and so terrible that no matter what you do, they're just not fixable. But sometimes you take small things, we all do, and we focus on them so much they become big things. You know the expression, don't make a mountain out of a molehill? Mm-hmm. We do that, is that sometimes we hold on to something, and it actually does, in our mind, become that big. Because the more we fascinate ourselves, the more emotionally tied we get to it, the more we think about it, it does build, especially when there's emotion involved, it does build the thoughts around that thing, and it can make us crazy. And in relationships, you know, early on in a relationship where you're almost addicted to the other person, these things can drive you crazy.
Yeah. And also, I guess important also is explain to people how important it is for you and for other people when you do something. Because sometimes you start to dig in some area that maybe is really important for the other person, is really important for me. If you explain yourself what is important for you, maybe the other person is more open to understand the topic.
Let me ask a question here. I've heard this, and this is going to be job related, but it's also relationship related as we draw the parallel. When you're in a job, if you have a bunch of strengths and a couple of weaknesses, is it easier to make more progress by focusing on the strengths and building in those areas or trying to fix the weaknesses? Do you know what the answer is? Well, the answer in the job world is work on your strengths. If you're not good in sales, but you're good in engineering, work on being an engineer. Don't work on, oh, trying to get better in sales. If you're really good in sales, but you're not like very versed in physics, don't start working on physics. Work on your strengths, because you can build upon your strengths much faster than you can take away weaknesses. And by focusing on weaknesses, you might just frustrate yourself. And again, the more frustrating of a situation you're in, the more it's like mud. It's like being in quicksand, that you just keep fighting something that you're getting no traction.
What happens if you need one skill for do your job that you know are strong?
Learn it.
Okay, so no, be just focused, and you need some tool. You don't know Excel, and Excel is the way that you make an invoice every week. You need to work in Excel.
Well, that's absolutely true, but if it's in absence of, like, if it's a choice, like, you know, I have these six areas, these five I'm strong in, and if I get stronger in it, it's completely overwhelming this one area versus, you know, the focus of the one area. And it has to do with also relationship in a way, and it may not at the same point. Like the thing that I don't like to do is cook. And Lizette always says, why don't you cook dinner? And I'm like, well, I can work on learning how to cook dinner.
I never say why you don't cook dinner, because I know you don't cook dinner.
There's it.
Okay.
Lizette in 30 seconds can whip up a dinner, you know, a 4-course dinner, here you have 5 courses, and I'll be like, boiling water still. What are you going to put in the water? I don't know, but I'm that far.
With,
I'm that
far. With the fork in the hand when they cook the dinner.
It's there. It's done. But for me, that's not an area that I work in. That's quote a weakness. But maybe my strength is building. Maybe I work on, okay, I'm going to do the floor of this room, or I'm going to do the wall, or I'm going to
put the light
in
the beginning this morning. Yeah, good.
That it's something that's maybe hands-on work that I can do, mm-hmm. that I'm sure Lizette could do, but maybe she's like, yeah, let me put him to work. Let him do something. I'll make some eggs over here. You do that. Mm-hmm. But the point is that instead of me working on something that Lizette is strong in, we try to use our strengths and offset each other in certain areas. Where one is strong, the other doesn't have to worry about being strong. She can just fall into my strong arms if she needs to. And I can fall into her wonderful dinners if I need to. But yes. That's the point, is that sometimes, as Lizette said, you have to work on a weakness. Because you have to figure out how to get over it. It's like a phobia. Sometimes if you have a phobia, you need to have cognitive behavioral therapy to get through that phobia, because it's holding you back from something that you want to achieve. But sometimes there's something like, I'm afraid of snakes. Well, I never come across snakes. I'm never going to work on that phobia. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. But if I'm afraid to go out in public and enjoy restaurants with Lizette, that may be something that I want to work on. If I'm afraid of dogs and walking down the street because the dogs, I'm afraid they're going to attack me, and therefore I don't go out or I don't go on walks with Lizette, well, maybe I want to work on that, because that's something that affects my life. So it doesn't mean you don't work on some of your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. It means you have to select the ones that are meaningful, mm-hmm. for the outcomes that you want to accomplish.
Now I agree.
Now you agree. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Hope you enjoyed today's unorthodox show on predispositions, on behavior, and overcoming communication. And what else?
Predisposition.
We had that one, predispositions.
Okay.
And a little bit of emotional intelligence.
And good communication.
And good communication. Thanks for listening. Have yourself a great week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.